Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Daily French Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined from Cape Town by Mr. Chris Patterson. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. And you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm also in Cape Town. I am rather enjoying this cool weather, although I'm sure this is not to some people's liking. I'm also joined, also from Cape Town, by Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I think you're all being very very demure and polite about the weather. It's quite miserable, actually. But it is, all three of us, I think, have sort of inured to it and quite like it. A colleague, a media colleague, who I believe lives in Nurtuk, commented this morning that it was rather soggy there. And I think soggy is perhaps the better adjective to use for the Cape at the moment. But otherwise,
indeed,
good fettle, yeah.
Looking out across the country, I see that basically everywhere except maybe the Kruger Park and Palaboa and that part of Limpopo and Messina is actually pretty cold today. So for this truly is a uniting experience that we can all bitterly complain about the cold. So news of today. Well, I think we have to, of course, talk about what's been going on with the firing of the DA Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield, who yesterday told the media that he'd been given a letter by the president kicking him out of cabinet, and the reasons why were not made clear. He subsequently said that he assumes it's because he went on a trip as a senior DA member to Washington, D.C. towards the beginning of the year to plead South Africa's case to the Americans. And he says that he informed Ramaphosa's office, but that Ramaphosa's office never got back to him. I'm still not sure if that is the official reason why he has been removed from cabinet. Now, this wouldn't be unprecedented. Deputy ministers and ministers, in fact, have been fired before for going abroad without permission. But this still seems like a rather flimsy excuse. The rumor has been that maybe this is because Ramaphosa doesn't want to look like he's being soft on the DA, and that in fact he was firing he's firing Andrew Whitfield because he's about to fire some ANC deputy ministers or ministers, and that this is sort of to soften the blow in his own party by making it look like, I don't know, they also got someone. I'm not quite sure how that works, but anyway. Now, we don't know that. That's just speculation. But it's worth bearing that in mind when we look at the ultimatum that the DA has sent now to the ANC, which they've been very public about, which is quite interesting because I think it shows the sort of political trap they're trying to set here. So yesterday, after a federal executive meeting of the DA's leadership, leader John Steenhuisen sent out, he sort of gave these remarks in Parliament about how this threatened the GNU. He said that they wouldn't take this lying down. He said that the ANC had 48 hours to fire a ANC minister or deputy minister implicated in corruption. Semelane, Ngubane, Mahlobo were all flagged as names that the Steenhuisen said should be fired. He said that they are holding, there's a double standard. They're holding a DA minister to account for not doing things wrong, in fact, for going after corruption, but they're protecting their own. He then said, if they fail to do so, the ANC will inflict grave consequences on South Africa. Make no mistake about it. What happens next is entirely on the ANC and President Ramaphosa. They did not have to do this. They have triggered all the events that follow. Should the ANC fail to meet our ultimatum, all bets are off and the consequences will be theirs to bear. I wonder what that means. And I think we can get into that a little bit now. But Michael, my theory on this from a sort of political strategy point of view is that the DA has actually sort of left a trap here. If Ramaphosa was indeed considering firing some of those ministers anyway, then if he does fire one of them now, the DA can say, you see, we pressured the government and we got one of the corrupt ministers fired. And if he doesn't, then the DA can say, look, they fired our guy for basically no good reason, but they refused to fire any of their own. And so no matter what Ramaphosa does, he's sort of unless he can change the terms of this debate, he's actually sort of fallen into a bit of a DA trap here, where he's going to look bad no matter what. Either he looks like he's been beaten by them in the public square, or he looks like he's so controlled by internal ANC forces that he can't actually do anything. So, Michael, do you think there's any merit to my theory? What do you make of this circumstance?
I definitely think there is merit to the theory. It's maddening not to know. I mean, as somebody who's my whole journalism career was based on the idea that it's far better to describe what has happened than to try and predict what's going to happen. It's not a very popular thing, funny enough, in journalism. Journalists love to constantly predict things and explain afterwards why they often get it wrong. So it's maddening not to know. But I think, you know, the ANC is clearly at great risk of playing politics here. And particularly in the case of, you know, a small number of DA ministers and deputy ministers who have now shown that they can actually run things pretty well, that they're pretty effective, that they are focused on the job at hand. They tend not to be disruptive and destructive in their engagements publicly, except on kind of key issues. The DA has been quite careful to avoid any sort of kind of petulant walkouts. It's choosing to take a stand on the VAT increase. That was a very astute move, I think, on their part. There'd been a lot of provocations since last June, over the past year, a lot of instances where they were, you know, a lot of people kind of expected them almost to kind of walk out or to have a complete breakdown, meltdown because of how the ANC was reacting to them or not reacting to them, ignoring them possibly. So, you know, here's the moment where the DA is, I think, seems to me tactically quite cleverly saying, we're going to vote for the budget here, but because we're responsible South Africans, we're a responsible party contributing to the well-being of the country. Unlike you guys in the ANC, you've just, you know, taken this kind of punitive measure against us without explaining yourself. So we are saying, you know, demonstrate your convictions in the next 48 hours, or you'll see. We don't know yet what that might amount to. I know that Terence yesterday in the show said that that the DA had demonstrated that it does have. I think his words were, you know, the DA is not without coercive power, and I think it showed that during the sort of budget impasse. But it's a bit of a high wire act, I think, at the moment. A lot of people watching to see how this is going to play out, and it's always difficult to predict what the consequences of that are going to be. But good for them for certainly, you know, flagging this issue in the way that they have. I think Steenhuisen's statement is very powerful. I think it'll have a lot of public resonance. The country is now, you know, we really are feeling the pinch in every possible way, and we still have corruption ongoing, wastage. We don't have the Zondo Commission recommendations implemented properly. We've seen none of these people who've been identified as problematic being dealt with. So, yeah, it's a good moment to take a stand on that, I think.
So, Chris, in the pre-show discussion, you mentioned to me that you were almost a little bit disappointed that the key vote on the fiscal framework stuff that was, I can't remember the exact name of the vote, but, you know, to do with the fiscus was up in Parliament just as this news came out. And it was in response to that Steenhuisen gave the some of these remarks. And it really kind of seems a little bit almost like the DA was not going to vote for that resolution, but they ended up doing it. And you said that you almost sort of kind of hoped that they maybe had voted against the government resolution. Do you maybe want to talk through your thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, I think that they should have been obstructionist because, I mean, in public view, you see the ANC has been walking over the DA for a year now, at least. And this was, I mean, we saw with the budget debate, for example, the DA said they were going to vote against the VAT increase. So they were using Parliament as an institution against the ANC's arrogance, for example. So I think that for me would have done it. But I know that the DA knows that they're polling quite well among South Africans, and the GNU at least is favorable amongst the public. So hopefully they'll be able to use that to their advantage. We'll see what the outcomes are. I think tomorrow's the deadline, Saturday at 6 p.m. We'll see.
Indeed. It is going to be interesting to see how the president responds to this. One gets the sense that this was once again a bit of an avoidable problem, in that, I remember this happened a bit with the signing into law of the expropriation bill. Ramaphosa, if he was being cunning, could have tried to maybe co-opt the DA over onto it, or maybe soften the blow, or maybe gotten them to be less outraged and betrayed when he signed the expropriation bill. I mean, who knows if that would have worked, but he at least could have tried by telling them beforehand. But he dropped it sort of on them in the middle of the night, causing this very aggressive reaction. And in this case, if he had come to them and said, look, I'm for my own position, I need to get rid of these ministers, but I also need to get rid of one of yours. Can we do some sort of deal? Can we make some sort of trade? I mean, obviously behind closed doors, he wouldn't want to say this publicly. He could have done that, and it would have, maybe he could have convinced the DA to go along with it if he had given them something. But instead, we just get this sort of out of nowhere, it's suddenly announced, the letter is sent out to this deputy minister, you're fired. Like they forgot to record the rest of the episode of The Apprentice. It's just cut to the punchline. So I don't know. This is, I think, once again, an illustration that, Ramaphosa does have quite a lot of political skills, but he's also prone to making these kind of really easy to make mistakes. And I think part of it is because, and this is the other discussion we were having beforehand, Michael, is that, the ANC is so sort of involved with itself. That it only seems to ever consider its own internal dynamics, its own worldview. It struggles to consider, to have a theory of mind of others. And I think that sometimes leads it into big mistakes. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it so happens. I mean, only today, let's see when it appeared. I can't actually see the time. 2 hours ago. Another piece on News 24 with the headline, GNU kicked off with newbie DA ministers told they do not just represent their party. So this is Minister in the Presidency, Kumbudzo Ntshavheni, giving a briefing today, press conference in Cape Town today, in which she says that that in the first year of the GNU, I suppose we're now coming up to an anniversary, ANC cabinet ministers had to constantly remind their DA colleagues that they did not represent their political parties. We had to clarify this to clarify that this is not a DA ministry, it's a government ministry. So the irony here, and she speaks about how, in this period, over this past 12 months, the DAs kind of got used to this idea. But in fact, the truth of the matter is that it's the ANC that is still battling to get used to the idea that it's in a GNU, that it's in a coalition, that it has to work with other parties, that it's actually agreed to do this. It's agreed to a plan of action, which is very different from being the party in charge. There's another story which we might get to chat about in a minute about the sort of longer history of the ANC's lodestars and what it commits to. But I think in this case, you're absolutely right. If there had been that proper level of cooperative sentiment within the GNU, certainly on the ANC's part, it would have been possible, one imagines, for Cyril Ramaphosa to go to John Steenhuisen and sit down and say, look, we've got to think of the national interest here. These are the things that I'm having to confront. These are the facts. These are the options. Let's talk about it. But clearly, none of that happened. So it came up completely out of the blue. Everybody was very cross. The reaction is immediate. And we have almost an engineered crisis, which could have been completely avoided had Ramaphosa had just a different sensibility about his role in government. He's not the leader of a governing party. He's a leader of a coalition party. And that's a very different thing.
Indeed. You know, Chris, what sort of just irritates me about this, I mean, you know, if the president wants to fire one of his coalition, as the ANC has been and the presidency have been at pains to point out, if he wants to fire a minister, he can. It's true. He has all the power to do so. But it really sort of grinds one's gears that it, you know, we've got all of these kind of dodgy characters sitting in government. And of course, I think probably the biggest one right now is Thembi Semelane, who is, you know, now the Minister of Human Settlements, but was the Minister of Justice until corruption allegations started flowing around her regarding a sort of VBS loan from her time in government in Limpopo, I think it was. And, you know, we've also got at the same time that, you know, we've got this DA minister fired. There was a story, I think, Michael, you've posted it to our discussion group about this, that the National Assembly Speaker, Toko Duduza, has reprimanded 8 MPs for their failure to declare financial interests on time. And those include Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Minister Romo Kopa, Deputy Justice Minister Andri Snell, Sihle Zikilala. There's just so many violations here that, you know, you just see kind of a minister getting chucked out, and it just sort of go, well, so it's clear that you're not afraid to fire somebody. I don't know. What's your take on that?
There was a section in that article where they say MPs were laughing at the speaker's warnings. They don't take ethics seriously. The ANC's never taken ethics any seriously. In fact, when I had ethics as a module in university, I didn't think very much of it either. But yeah, I mean, ANC is not an ethical organization. I remember this, seeing this poster of the ANC about the era of impunity being over, yet there's members of the president's cabinet that is still there, busy being accused of impunity, and they're still sitting there. Yeah, I don't think the ANC is an ethical organization. I don't even think the ANC knows what ethics is, to be honest. They've all been engulfed by cadre deployment and their own pockets. So I think, yeah, the ANC is on its deathbed.
So let's go on to, well, I think that's been true for some time already. Let's sort of go on to a bit of a related story here. And it's around about now, I'm not sure of the exact date, but we are around the 70th anniversary of the adoption of the Freedom Charter. And kind of to your point, Chris, you know, what ANC member was giving the speech on the Freedom Charter? Well, it was Nomvula Mokonyane, the Deputy Secretary General. Nomvula Mokonyane, of course, who has been the Zondo Commission suggested she should be prosecuted for corruption for some of her dealings with Basasa. And yet, here she is giving a speech representing the party, being in a senior leadership position. You know, Deputy Secretary General is pretty high up in the rankings. She was speaking to a meeting about the 70 years of the Freedom Charter, saying that, you know, it's true, we haven't, after 31 years in democracy, been able to achieve all of the goals of the Freedom Charter, particularly wealth distribution, was one of the things she flagged as a promise of the Freedom Charter that had not been met. Michael, I think this just goes to your point about, you know, sort of the ANC being in love with its own mythology still to this day. It's still an organization that just seems to be like, you know, it's like a kind of washed up guy at the bar who just keeps telling you about the good old days. Like, oh, you know, I used to be a rock star, you know, and I played to a crowd of thousands. And it's like, I mean, cool, you did, man. But, you know, it's 2025. What are you doing? I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, exactly. I was just making a note to myself here that, you know, one of the tragedies of this really is that it kind of sullies what was the grandeur and nobility of this fight against oppression and abuse. It was very, very hard. much harder than I think anyone alive today can even imagine. I grew up in a little bit period of it. I was born in 1959, so 4 years after the Kliptown gathering where the Freedom Charter was fashioned. But it's very difficult to recall properly what exactly it was like. And especially somebody who was in fact a kind of beneficiary of all those awful things, by and large. So one of the most annoying things for me is how this kind of thing, the corrupt minister or corrupt individual of this overbearing and arrogant party, making all these statements as if speaking on behalf of those people, but it's actually sullying the nobility of that effort, flawed as it was. And I think that's the second point, is that, we can see now, 70 years later, the sentiments may have been grand and the sentiments may have been sort of on the right track. South Africa belongs to all who live in it. This was understood to reflect the very opposite of a society where most people had no vote and no rights and so on. But taken literally is not actually going to serve us very well in 2025. We've actually got to understand this within the kind of rhetorical history that it's covered. Today we need a modern approach to all the problems that the modern world confronts us with. The economy, a changing economy, the kinds of skills we need, the fact that people are moving from the countryside to the cities, the cities now becoming overburdened, filled with people. I think in not so many years' time, 80% of South Africa is going to be urbanized. So to talk about, peasants and land reform and all these the kind of 1950s things in these romantic terms is just so completely off the mark. And it's just distracting us from what we really ought to be focusing on, which is today's problems and tomorrow's problems. And if we don't do them, we're going to have a worse situation than we have today. And we already have a bad one because we are constantly going back to this ANC-centric, romanticized idea of struggle. And the ANC itself is the one that is sullying that. And it's a terrible shame. So it's up to the rest of us to wrench the society around, to face the front, say these are the things we need to look at. These are the things that really matter. People living in cities, jobs, better education, better lives. That's really what people want and need and deserve after all this time. 70 years after Kliptown. I mean, this really is a crying shame.
Yeah, I've always thought that the ANC was always attached in a way to the Freedom Charter, that the Constitution in many ways in my mind sort of superseded it, right? The Freedom Charter back in the 50s, you could say, this is the real sort of foundation of the nation of South Africa. And you could make that claim because the government of the day was not democratically representative and it was oppressive and all those things. But nowadays we have a constitution which went through democratic processes, which was drafted after lots of consultations and negotiations, and it was voted in by a parliament. It was a pretty good constitution. It's not perfect, but there are very few legal documents in the world that are, and it has created a great foundation for our country. But the ANC is kind of, even though it was, a big part of creating the Constitution, has never been able to bring itself to love the Constitution quite like it loves the Freedom Charter. And I think that's because the Freedom Charter represents really all that it really wanted to be. I mean, like dividing the land between those who work it and all those kind of first year graduate communist seminar ideas that fill this document. In the 1950s, exactly. 1950s, that sounds like a much better idea. When you are looking at it from the other side of the fall of the Berlin Wall, it doesn't seem like such a great idea. But Chris, I don't know your thoughts on this. It's kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, this is an important document in our country's sort of history and the development of sort of the modern South Africa. But do you agree with me that, you know, really it's the constitution now that should be getting this love from the ANC?
Yeah, I think the constitution is sort of an expression of the people, or at least nominally. And Freedom Charter is an old document that doesn't translate to reality anymore. It's not reality for the unemployed South African that gets up every morning looking for a job, struggling to find a job, struggling to put food on the table. There was Hope Popo that was saying in other countries, some of the things which are done in South Africa, people would have been arrested. Like, I mean, you live in South Africa, yes, you live in a free country, but don't threaten people about being arrested somewhere else in a country that they don't live in. She says, yeah, there's also, interestingly, the last sentence in this article, there are also black people who are resisting change in South Africa, defaulting back to that ANC group think about this. No individual, and the individual can't be assessed on their own merits. I mean, that's olden times thinking. That's not what the Constitution put forward for a new South Africa, I would say.
Indeed. Any final thoughts, Michael, before we close for today?
I agree with Gina. You know, what would Saul Plaatje think of all this? I think he'd be absolutely horrified. I think not a bad thing to think back to those early people here.
Think I once snarkily wrote in a piece or something that you know, the ANC has changed from being the party which produced, where its secretary general was Saul Plaatje, to where their secretary general was Fikile Mbalula, which is quite a metamorphosis.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. I think let's call it to a close there. Thank you very much for watching. We hope you found this interesting. I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about next week. We'll see what happens when the ultimatum expires and what the DA's next move is. You know, maybe it'll – I see there's the comment section is a little bit divided. There's some who say the DA's weak and soft and won't do anything, and then there's some sentiment – that actually they're going to, you know, maybe pull something out here. I think that'll be interesting to watch. And we'll no doubt be able to talk about it on Monday. So we'll see you then. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone.